and talk all about that is the man who covers the Eagles for ESPN.com. He's on the Comcast Business Hotline. His name is Tim McManus. Tim, how many burner Twitter accounts do you have?
I only need one, baby.
You only need one. It's Tim McManus tweeting straight out under the name of Tim McManus.
That's right. Tim underscore McManus, and that's all you need.
All right, there you go. Now, apparently you are on your way to this charity softball game hosted by Carson Wentz tonight. Will you be a participant, or are you just there to talk to the players?
Heading down to the ball yard. No, I'm not going to be swinging, but I'll be taking the festivities in. This is Carson Wentz' inaugural softball charity game at Citizens Bank Park, and it's going to be a pretty good turnout. 25 of his teammates are supposed to show up, and they're going to have a home run derby starting around 6 o'clock, and then Carson Wentz is one captain, Jordan Hicks is the other. They're going to draw teams from there, and then have softball games starting up at 7:30.
So you're not going to bring the leather? What position would you play if Carson says, Tim, get out there?
Center field and leadoff hitter was always my go.
Oh, so you got some wheels. You got some wheels.
I had some wheels.
Okay. All right. Carson, I hope, is not playing in this game, right? Is he managing and not playing, or will he actually try to swing the bat?
Well, hopefully he has a designated runner anyway. but, you know, we've seen him out on the field. So really two glimpses during the OTA so far. The first one was in the practice bubble where he opened a lot of eyes, where he was participating in the individual drills and showing some decent mobility. And then the second time we got to look at him was this past week, and it was outside. So he had more free range to do some things. And he did more. He's participating a lot, actually, Mike, in these practices. I mean, he took part in just about all of the non-11-on-11 drills during this past practice. And when he wasn't out there, he would go off to the side and, you know, they would tie like a rope around him so he would drag a weight as he's doing sprints up and down the field. And then he was doing full sprints for about 50 yards, did probably like 5 or 6 of them during another portion of practice. I mean, we're really seeing him ramp up the activity, and based off of what we've seen, he could probably slug a softball and jog to first base based off what his recovery's doing. So
what I thought was encouraging is that the brace he's wearing is not like one of those side hinge metal braces. It's a sleeve brace, which to me indicates that it's in pretty decent shape right now.
Yeah, I think he's experimenting with different ones. I need to talk to him a little bit more about that, but it looked like a different type of brace that he was wearing in these past OTAs, and he was having a little bit of a difficult time getting adjusted to it. You could see during almost all practice, he's like pulling on the thing, and every time he stops running, he's just like pulling up on it. And he had a little bit of a hitch, I think, compared to the first time I saw him last week. I think maybe that's part of getting adjusted to the brace. I think it's kind of clear that he doesn't like it. He's still getting accustomed to it. It's something that that'll be a process, I'm sure, throughout the course of the season. And I know safety wise, it's recommended that he wear one, especially because it's his lead leg, not just this year, but perhaps for the entirety of his career. That's something that he's going to have to get adjusted to. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's not like he's got this huge contraption on the leg where it's totally restricting his mobility, but I'm sure that they'll be tweaking and experimenting with that on the lead up to September.
All right, the three major stories next week, I break them down. Number one, OTAs actually begin. The second part of that, the subsection of that is, will there be anybody that doesn't show? And Michael Bennett comes to mind. And then, of course, the third big story is the White House visit and what you've been able to glean on who's going and who's not going. So let's take it one at a time. The OTA's beginning. What are you hearing about attendance?
Well, we're starting to run out of a runway here when it comes to the OTAs because they have this upcoming week. And then they get into their mini camp the following week before it goes dark, before, that month break before training camp. And so essentially we're talking about one more shot for Michael Bennett to be on the field. And when we talked to Doug Peterson originally at the start of OTAs, he said that he did expect Bennett to participate in some portion of the OTAs this spring, which means that it's very possible that we see him for the first time next week. And so that's something to certainly look out for. I don't think that anybody on the team is ultra concerned about it. Bennett didn't really go to OTAs very much when he was in Seattle. And because he's a veteran and he's going to be essentially asked to kind of pin the ears back in Jim Schwartz's system and get after the quarterback, I don't know that there's going to be a huge learning curve. But so that's a possibility. And then Darren Sproles hasn't really been there either. But also, that's nothing new. He likes to train out in San Diego.
So he will not be at OTAs, you think?
Well, he may make an appearance, but knowing the way that he has been operating over the past couple seasons, he really likes to stay close to his family for as long as possible before coming east.
But these are mandatory, though, right?
The mini camp is mandatory, and that's 2 weeks from now.
Oh, it's 2 weeks from now. Okay, all right. The White House situation. What word do you have on they were supposed to organize and get this all settled? Has anything been settled on it?
Well, the first thing I'll say is that the Eagles have been very cautious about how they're handling this, and they've played everything super close to the vest. I mean, any information has been very tough to come by. They've often let the White House take the lead in announcing the dates and all of those things. And the itinerary is still not out. They just sent us media requests, papers, like yesterday. So this is all kind of, it feels sort of last minute, and the itinerary still hasn't been, fully fleshed out and certainly not passed along to the media to this point. So you try to dig out whatever details we can, and we know that there's going to be some headliners that aren't going to be making the trip to the White House specifically. Malcolm Jenkins, Chris Long, it doesn't look like Brandon Graham is going to be going, and I think there's going to be at least a handful of others that aren't going to be participating. But they are still trying to make this a team trip. And so most of the guys are going to be going on the trip to D.C., and then they're going to have different events set up over the course of the day that the players have the options of, the way that Jenkins put it, doing as much or as little as they want to. And so since they're in D.C., it would totally make sense for Jenkins and those guys to try to meet up with some politicians to do some community service work. And I think they're going to have that kind of structured into the day. So everybody's going, and if you want to go to the White House, you can do that, or you can take part in
won't be anybody who is not on that bus.
It doesn't sound like it. It sounds like, we just talked about whether Bennett is in town and all that, but it sounds like most of the guys are going to be on the trip going to D.C. It's just, they just have an option built in of whether you want to go to the White House or not.
Very interesting. Okay, the last thing I want to talk to you about is Jim Schwartz threw a new name out there for slot corner. Who is Devontae Bosby?
Devontae Bosby is a guy who came out of Pittsburgh State. He, in 2015, he came into the NFL, started with the Chiefs, went to the Bears, back to the Chiefs, has only appeared in like four games. But the Eagles have really liked what they've seen since he's been part of their organization. He spent the bulk of last year on the practice squad, and they look at the measurables and they're definitely intrigued by that. He's 6'2", he's 190 pounds, and he ran a wind-aided 4.22 40 at the combine coming out of college. So he's very fast, and they like the way that he's picked up the system, the way that he helped when he was on the practice squad, and what he's shown in practice to this point. And he was running with the first team during the OTA this past week. The week before that, obviously, it was Sidney Jones. And we had the conversation at that point where they're experimenting right now. They're looking at different options to see what the best bet is to replace Patrick Robinson. And maybe there's multiple options there depending on what the matchup is for a given week. But it's at least clear at this point that Bosby is a guy that has gotten on their radar, that they're hoping and see some promise in, that he will develop, and they're giving him an early shot to see whether he can be a potential solution for that slot corner position that was vacated by Patrick Robinson.
Tim, off the subject, I got to ask you before you go. We're dealing with the Colangelo situation and the burner Twitter accounts, and yeah. I want to know how prevalent you think that is in the football industry. There are a lot more people that cover the NFL than probably any other sport. From both ends, either from a football management end, a coach's, the general manager's end, to a media end, how prevalent is it, and does it get in your way, or how does it affect you as a reporter?
Well, one thing that I thought of when this came out is that you wonder if this opens up a box in any way, where there are other examples of people who are doing this in some kind of fashion across sports. You know, I can say with certainty that management and people within the organization absolutely have Twitter accounts that, whether or not it's not, you know, it's not Joe underscore Douglas or whatever the case, or Jeff Lurie, but I think that everybody has eyes on social media and is certainly interested and invested in what's going on there. That's not to say that everybody's doing what happened in this situation with Eric Jr., but I think that it would be foolish to think that there aren't executives and coaches all throughout the NFL and all of sports that have accounts, probably not active ones where they're writing or anything, but certainly ones at least where they can peer in and see what's being said and written about them.
And I would think that agents, and there's a ton of agents representing NFL players, would be out there putting out misinformation or trying to lead people down a certain path, right? I mean, that you've got to ferret through all that kind of stuff.
No, it's a great point. I mean, there's always, you're trying to sway an argument, and I think agents, it's a great thing to bring up. I mean, you know, you're advocating for your clients, you're trying to counter messages that are out there. And so there's probably a decent amount of this kind of stuff going on. I don't know if it's to the extreme that we're seeing in this case, but you know, you obviously have to be very smart and careful on social media, period. And I think that especially pertains to people who are in positions of influence.
Does it make you check out everything that's thrown out there? Now, especially now, because, you know, this stuff that was thrown out there by Eric Jr. and the other accounts was kind of true stuff and true opinion. So does it force you to almost check out like every little thing?
Yeah, I mean, your antenna absolutely goes up more. I mean, there's always kind of a suspicion that there would be, I mean, there's bots everywhere. And, you know, there's motivation to try to influence a message or counter a message. And so it wouldn't be at all surprising as if there are influences out there in that respect. But absolutely, it puts your radar up all the more. Because it's hard to believe that this is the only incident out there of all the sports, considering how much is on the line, considering how much ego is on the line, and how I think defenseless you must feel in some respects, depending on what your position is, to not think that there's other things out there. So yeah, the antenna is way up on my end, and I'm sure throughout media as well.
All right, Timmy, great stuff. Always a pleasure. Are you going to the White House?
I'm going, yeah.
Oh, well, cool.
I'm heading down. The credentials just got put in, so my first trip. I'm looking forward to it.
And do they keep you at bay, away from like the actual team being greeted by the president, or are you dug right in there?
Yeah, my guess is that we'll be cordoned off to some extent, but you know, hopefully we're close enough to at least see everything go down. But I'm sure we'll be roped in somewhere.
Okay.
You get to see. We'll be in the press room, so that'll be kind of cool. And whatever lawn that they hold this on, so it should be pretty neat. Have you ever been?
I've been to the White House, but on a school trip, so yeah, it didn't count. But if you just say that the President Donald Trump comes down the line like it's a wedding reception, and he shakes hands with all the media dudes, and he comes to Tim McManus, and like, what do you say?
You know, I've actually thought about that, and then I stopped processing it because I thought the chances that President Trump is going to come walk by me and I'm going to have an interaction are like so minuscule that I just stopped that thought process. So I haven't thought it all the way through. I guess it'll have to be a game time decision.
Hello, Mr. President, basically.
Yeah, be respectful, of course.
All right.
Yeah.
Nice hair. You throw that in there?
No, I don't think we got that far.
All right. Timmy, thanks, man. We'll talk to you.
All right, Mike.
All right, there he is.